Greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on making money with hard money, right after this. Well, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, it was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai. You and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits under that contract, such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush, when he was running for election back in 2000, said that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. But that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these experts recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business and sales. It's not in public business, and it's certainly not in jobs, jobs, jobs. Now, it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect those benefits of that old covenant contract. And to collect those benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, that's called property. Instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on my CD, Homeschool, my business school for adults. And while you're at it, order my free general law CD package at the same time. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And then it's an informative, entertaining, and educational program, which is free of charge, and you can call right now and order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about Franklin Sanders' manual on hard metal trading. We're on Chapter 3, talking about investment mistakes, trend, and timing. Listen to this. You know, most investors founder by ignoring the most important proverb in investing, and that is, quote, "the trend is your friend," unquote. Always remember that. The trend is your friend. Identify the primary trend in the market and then stay with that direction, whether it's going up or going down. Now, what is the primary trend? What do we mean by that? Well, the primary trend is the direction of the market that lasts for years, although it has some zigs and zags, that is, some ups and downs. Now, the last bull market in stocks lasted from 1982 until March of 2000. And it ran up from 982 to a high of 11,722. The last silver bull market lasted from 1960 to 1980. And it took silver from 90 cents an ounce to $50 an ounce. Now, a bull market is a primary trend upwards, and a bear market is a primary trend downwards. Now remember, the market proverb says the trend is your friend. That means that you should always invest with the primary trend and not against the primary trend. The rule of thumb says that a bear market lasts one-third to one-half as long as the preceding bull market. Now, stocks are a ready example. In the year 2004, people were still buying stocks. They're still holding stocks. People are still holding IRAs and 401ks invested in stocks and mutual funds. They identified the last primary trend, that is the bull market stocks from 1982 to 1999. But they refused to notice that the trend changed in March of 2000. Stocks are now in a primary bear market. And it will remain in that bear market until they reach sold-out rock-bottom value. And that's going to be several years from now. Since the primary trend in stocks is down, then you want to sell your stocks, not buy them. You can sell stocks several ways. You can sell them out of your portfolio and cash in your IRAs or mutual funds. Actively short sell them without owning them. Buy bear mutual funds that profit when the market drops, like the Prudent Bear Fund, or buy put options on stocks or stock indexes. So briefly, you want to be short stocks, which are trending down, and long on whatever it is that's trending up. Now let's take a look at the dollar, that paper dollar that you carry in your wallet. Another example is the U.S. dollar. Since silver back in 1873 and gold in 1934 were demonetized, all national currencies worldwide have now become fiat currencies. They're not backed by anything. Fiat currencies always sink to their intrinsic value, and that is the value of the paper that they are printed on. 3 cents. Now, don't take my word for it. Listen to Comrade Chairman Alan Greenspan of the Federal Reserve Board. Here's what Alan had to say. Quote, although the gold standard could hardly be portrayed as having produced a period of price tranquility, the price level in 1929 was not much different on net from what it had been in 1800. But in the two decades following the abandonment of the gold standard in 1933, from 1933 to 1953, the consumer price index in the United States doubled. And in 4 decades after that, from 1953 to 1993, prices quintupled. Now let's turn that statement upside down. When prices double, the value of your dollar is cut in half. When prices quintuple, the value of your dollar sinks to 20 cents. When prices are cut in half and then quintuple, the value of your dollar falls to a dime. In fact, since 1933, when $20 would buy an ounce of gold, the dollar has fallen to about $400 an ounce. Turned upside down, today's dollar in gold terms buys about 5 cents of what a 1933 dollar bought. Now, surely that's one of the great primary trends of all time. Since 1934, you have had no surer, no more profitable bet than to bet against the U.S. dollar, because it's going down. Today's dollar is an idea only. It's a wish. It's a will of the wisp. It is wholly a managed economy and currency. The Federal Reserve, conspiring with the federal government, manipulate the dollar's value by creating dollars more or less slowly, by secretly buying or selling currencies or gold in the marketplace, and by mass propaganda. The Federal Reserve Chairman said today that U.S. Treasury Secretary announced today. That's what you hear. You see, the Federal Reserve Chairman said today, or the U.S. Treasury Secretary announced today, they tell us what its value is. They tell us what we're going to do next. It's managed. It's directed. It's choreographed. It's not a free market. Gold is not in a free market. Silver is not in a free market. Stocks and bonds aren't in a free market. The banks and the government print up the paper to go out and buy it or sell it to manipulate its price or its value in relationship to these fiat currencies. Now remember, I showed you earlier that the correct way to measure the value of gold and silver coin is against each other. That's not artificial. When God designed it, he put 17.5 ounces of silver for every ounce of gold into the crust of the earth. The real price, the real value of an ounce of gold is 17.5 ounces of silver. And the real value, or the real price of an ounce of gold, or excuse me, of an ounce of silver, is 1/17th of an ounce of gold. And that's just where reality's at. Now, when you see values in dollars, remember the Federal Reserve prints those dollars for 3 cents each. 3 cents each. The purchasing power of a dollar today is down to a nickel, and it's just about to collapse totally. Boy, won't that be a shock. Now, today's dollar is an idea. It's a wish. It's a will of the wisp. They must keep on creating more dollars to pay the existing debt and prevent a deflationary meltdown. And that's exactly what government's going to do. Worse yet, the manipulators' historic performance and stated policy declare that they intend to gut the dollar. The value of the U.S. dollar then will continue dropping. The primary trend is down. So you want to get on the right side of the trend. You want to be short U.S. dollars and all dollar-denominated assets. Stop playing with dollars. Those are unjust weights and balances. They violate thou shalt not steal, and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And if you violate those laws, there's a penalty to pay. Poverty. Loss. Now, timing is important, and you might identify a trend change and get on the right side of that trend, but you have to do it at the right time. Now, your wife probably loves you or loves for you to kiss her, but not while you're sitting in church. Now, in the short term, markets jump up and down. They run up a long ways only to turn and give up two-fifths or half or more of that again. Now, you'd like to get in as cheaply as possible, even when you're on the right side of the trend. Now, that's called timing. You want to buy low and sell high. That's called timing. Now, the trend is your friend, and timing is important. Since the primary trend for stocks and the dollar is down, then we want to sell stocks and sell the U.S. dollar and dollar-denominated assets. Since the primary trend for gold and silver is up, then you want to buy gold and silver. Most of the money changer readers, and I know from talking with you, are investors. So for you, my strategy is as follows. You build a long-term silver and gold position in the first stages of this bull market while prices remain low. Increase your gold and silver ounces with a gold-silver ratio trading strategy while you wait. Invest in gold and silver stocks, those are called equities, to increase your leverage. For silver or gold stocks, I recommend Sam Parks at the National Securities in Seattle. Sam has been in the brokerage business for over 40 years and knows mining stocks inside out. His integrity is also unquestionable. And finally, number four, for investors as well as traders, I occasionally make gold and silver option recommendations. Options offer you a fairly long time to be right, huge leverage, and low risk. Now, for right now, both metals have enjoyed a run-up that ended in April of 2004, and the inevitable reaction then set in. When the reaction cools off, then the primary trend will be up again. Here's where you need a cool and steady head. So we stayed out of the metals markets while they were peaking, and then stood aside waiting for the downside reaction to run out of steam. Now that that has occurred, we now see that it's time to buy both silver and gold. Now when everybody else is shunning them, has this reaction for silver and gold bottom for sure? Well, nobody knows what the top or the bottom is. But we have to discipline ourselves to look at the long term and buy now. If the metals drop more, then we'll swallow hard and buy more. Either way, both silver and gold are in an upward primary trend, and as long as that trend endures, we ought to accumulate or hold. All right, so you want to buy when the trend is down. So starting about 1981, when the price of silver dropped from $50 to $15, I started buying. I have been a net buyer and holder of silver from 1981 until today. I'm still buying silver. At $7 to $8 an ounce, it's still dirt cheap. I'll be buying silver until it runs back up to $15. At $15, I'll stop. Then I will wait until the bubble, you know, when silver hits $15, then the speculators and the bubble chasers jump into the market, and they drive the price up. Now, we don't know where the price is going to top. So at some point in time, it'll hit $50, $70, $80, $100 an ounce. Because when the pendulum swings, it always swings way beyond where it ought to. And then it'll start down. So let's say that it tops 75. Well, when it gets back down to 65, 60, 55, 50, then you know that it's in free fall. Now's the time to sell. Now you sell it. You'll never hit the market at the top. You know, everybody dreams about buying at the bottom at $350 and selling at the top $55. That's just idle speculation. What you do is you catch the trend on the way down. It started down in 81 and it's been down ever since. Now the trend has started back up. It's been going up since $4. So now from 4 it's almost up to 8. And it's hit 8 a couple of times. In the past, over the last 5 years, it's hit 80. It hit 8, I think, in 1999, 2000, long in there. And that's the zigs and the zags. Now, the primary trend is up, and it'll be up for 20 years. Remember, the last silver bull market was 60 to 80. 20 years. Now, we've only been in this bull market now for about 4 or 5 years. And this bull market is going to run. And when it runs, it'll have a peak. It'll have a bubble in it, just like the housing bubble right now. So if you've got a house, now's the time to sell it. You're at the top of the bubble. Oh, it may gain some more. It may last another year or two. I remember old Russell Harvey sold out his stock in 1927. Everybody laughed at him, made fun of him. Boys and girls, when you're investing, you're always going against the trend. Everybody is always laughing at you, making fun of you. It's been that way all my life. God bless them. When people stop laughing at me, I know it's time to change directions. When people finally wake up and agree with me, it's time for me to reverse course. Then they start laughing at me again, and they say, hey, you're nuts. See? So I'm still buying silver, and I will until it hits 15. 15 is where the price ought to be. In fact, it should be a little higher than that, but I'm not going to write it to the top. Watch this. Right now, gold is at $430. So let's just plug 430 in. Divide that by 16. That's the normal run of the mill. The price of silver should be $26.87. The price of silver today is $8. It's one-third of what it ought to be. Now, either gold is vastly overpriced or silver is vastly underpriced. You know, one or the other. Now, let's take a look at gold. The gold hit $800 an ounce in 1980. That was vastly overpriced. Today, it's at $400 and it's vastly underpriced. And that's because the value of paper has dropped by 50% over the last 25 years. $800 gold in 1980 dollars is $400. So today, when you see gold at $400, the real price of gold today is $200. Gold is underpriced by 50%. Silver is underpriced by 67%. So should I buy undervalued gold at 2 to 1, or should I buy undervalued silver at 3 to 1? Well, you know, again, it doesn't take rocket science here. Now, three times in the 20th century, the ratio of silver to gold came back to equilibrium, that is 16 to 1. Now, in the trade, we use the number 16 to 1. The real number is 17.5 to 1. Right now, it's running around 60 to 1. So that means that for every ounce of gold that you trade in, you'll get about 60 ounces of silver. When the ratio drops down from 60 to 40, you've made a 33% gain. Can you follow that? Well, stick around and we'll tell you a little bit more as we progress along. Remember, dollar denominated means the investment's value is determined by the U.S. dollar's value. For example, you might buy U.S. government bonds and they might rise a little bit. But if the dollar drops more than the bonds rise, then you lose money. And that's called purchasing power. Purchasing power. Today, people are living in houses with a median price tag of $160,000. That's just blarney. And that's a $30,000 house. That's all. You still got a $30,000 house. Now, the real value of that house, priced in gold, would be $30,000, maybe less. It's about 7 to 1, so let's just take $161,000 and divide that by 7. The real value of the house is $23,000. So you've got a $23,000 house priced at $161,000, and most people believe they've made a humongous profit. I hear people all the time, they say, gee, I bought that house 30 years ago and I paid $40,000 for it, and today it's worth $200,000. Well, okay, dream on. You're still living in the same value house. In fact, it's worth less because now it's older, has more termites. But if you get this $200,000 tied up in your house, you're just about to the top of the bull market in housing. We're riding in a bubble right now. Now's the time to sell that and get into something else. But it's not dollars, and it's not bonds, and it's not stocks. And right now, the market, and I remember old Frank, my gold broker Frank, that's about, 10 years ago or something like that, the price of platinum dropped to $265 an ounce. And then I didn't have a whole lot of money at that time, and so Frank said, well, I'm converting all of my gold. Frank is a gold man, and he doesn't like silver at all. He's not a bimetallist. He's a monometallist, and he buys gold, and he traded his gold for platinum. Price of platinum went up to $700 an ounce, so he converted the platinum at $700 an ounce back into gold for $275. Did you follow that? Now, we always want to price things in dollars because that's what we're trained to think in, is dollars. Now, if you want to be a bimetallist, then you have to think in ounces. We think in weights, not value. Value is deceptive. But in order to give us, so that we can converse, a base to stand on, we have to use dollar values. But that's not the way we want to trade. See, we want to be trading gold for silver and silver for gold so that when you start with 50 ounces, you double from 50 ounces to 100 ounces to 200 ounces to 400 ounces. Forget about dollar values now, because those dollar values are deceptive. It's like buying a house for $23,000 and then living in the house until it reaches $161,000 and then saying, my God, look at the profit I've made. I made $138,000 profit. No. You didn't make any profit at all. You stood still. Because when we compare that to gold, when we compare that to its real value, it takes us back down to its purchasing power. Now, if you can take 50 ounces of gold and turn that into 100 ounces, you've increased your purchasing power by 100%. Now, that's what we're after. And that's called real profit. And that real profit is made off of the losses of other people who buy in value and sell in weight. They buy in value and sell in weight. Now, I want to buy in weight and sell in value. And I'm going to double my weights, so I'm going to double my value. It really doesn't make any difference whether gold goes up to $800 an ounce, $1,600 an ounce, or $3,200 an ounce. All those numbers are telling you is, it isn't that the price of gold is more valuable, or the gold is more valuable. It's telling you that the paper is less valuable. The paper is losing value. That's all that's telling you. But when you start with 100 ounces and you end up with 200 ounces, now you got a profit. Now, that's what we're after, profits. As I said earlier, there are businessmen And there's a few of those, and they're business boys, and there are many business boys who buy houses for $23,000, watch them ride up in value to $161,000, and then compute their profit at $138,000. No, 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 no. That's not profit. All you did was stand still. Now, here's why silver will outperform gold. The argument for silver outperforming gold during the next precious metals bull markets boils down to two things. That's history and volatility. Now, there's a hidden presupposition here. One presupposition must undergird the argument for gold rising faster than silver, namely that both metals profit from currency depreciation. And we can argue this in either or both of two ways. Namely, that all hard commodities increase in value during currency depreciations, or that gold and silver will move together. Here's your commodity argument. Dr. Gary North insists that nothing has intrinsic value. Rather, he says things possess only a subjective value placed on them by the market. So, okay. Let's bypass that vexatious and theoretical question by simply noting that we can be sure that everything has a relative value. And that is this. We can rank things by their value, and the measure of that value at any given moment is what we call the market price. Market price. Now, a fiat currency has no value beyond whatever confidence that you and your fellow citizens place in it. So as currency depreciates and confidence wanes, the value of fiat money relative to other things declines. So in plain English, the prices of corn, wheat, beans, coffee, motor oil, lumber, eggs, pork bellies, feeder cattle, pig iron, copper, silver, gold will all rise when the currency depreciates. So in plain pidgin English, dollar go down, commodity go up. Now, silver is a thing. It is a commodity. It is sold on the commodity exchange, like gold. And the prices of commodities, like gold and silver, rise when the dollar depreciates. Now, the dollar is depreciating, and it will continue to depreciate for some time to come. Therefore, the prices of commodities, including both gold and silver, will rise. And that is case number one for gold and silver rising together. Silver and gold are in monetary lockstep. Now, the case for silver and gold moving together is also supported by their performance from 1950 to 1980. During this precious metals bull market, beginning in 1960 and terminating in 1980, silver and gold both moved together. Now, I assume that both metals are monetary, so both responded to monetary demand caused by inflation. Anybody who disputes this has to produce a better explanation for why they moved together in that 20-year period. In addition, I could show that silver and gold moved together during inflations and deflations from 1800 to 1870, obviously responding to monetary causes in like fashion. So I forbear to do that on the grounds that silver was officially demonetized in 1873 in the United States and Europe. So it operates today in a different environment. Obviously, silver demand altered hugely after the latest largest component of demand was politically withdrawn. Discussing the metal's performance in periods of inflation and deflation, Roy Justram writes, quote, Silver did not do it all badly until 1890, when it collapsed in its power to exchange against other commodities, and it has been highly erratic ever since. In the 40 years following 1890, it lost 76% of its purchasing power, cataclysmic for a precious metal. Gold never behaved that way in all the history of Britain and America. Well, of course, gold hadn't been demonetized, and that's why. All right, we got to take a break here, so hang on. I'll be right back with more on gold and silver and how to profit right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, back in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. And that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin, but public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper, things like stocks, bonds, and Federal Reserve notes. Well, back in 1965, Congress told us that there's no difference in the value of gold and silver coin compared with clad coin and currency. And you know, that's true when you're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there is a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold and silver over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper that are not due on the gold and silver. Now, you know, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate the American people, they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin to take away the people's right to property, and to destroy their property rights. And they have succeeded. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights, because property is the legal foundation of all liberty. Now, let me teach you how to do just that. That's my business school, and it's now on compact disc for adult homeschoolers. Now, for your information, or for more information about my private business school, just call and order my free general law CD package. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free. You can call right now to order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. And my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about gold and silver, how to profit making money with hard money. One of the big complaints that people have is that when you buy gold and silver, it doesn't make anything for you. You don't get any interest off of it. Well, the money that you've been putting in the bank hasn't made you any money either. The stocks and bonds that you've been buying hasn't made you any money. You might have thought you made a profit, but I told you in the last half hour that you bought a house for $23,000. If you sold it for $161,000, all you did was tread water. You didn't make any profit. But if you could buy 100 ounces of silver or gold and then turn it into 200 ounces, now you'd have a profit. Because that's not value, that's actual weight. You've actually doubled the quantity. You've doubled your substance. When you double the value of your paper money, and you do that over a 15-year period, all you're doing is standing still. You have to double every 14 years just to stand still at 5% compounded annually. Now, Jastrom also shows that from 1951 to 79, silver gained 380% in purchasing power. Gold in that same period, 1951 to 79, gained 240%. Now, that and Jastrom's remarks above underscore silver's greater volatility. It is true that it might work against you, but in the last bull market, it worked in favor of silver investors. Now, let's look at the historical argument. Gary North ends his denunciation of silver with these words. He said, quote, if there is a case for silver versus gold, let someone else make it. Let him who makes it not invoke, rather, the 16-to-1. And also let the argument be based on fundamentals, not the myth of intrinsic value. Unquote. Dr. Gary North. Now, Gary North, like my broker, Frank, is what we call a monometallist. When God designed the world's economy, back at the Garden of Eden, he was a bimetallist, and he created gold and silver. And throughout the Bible, you see that gold and silver are money. It's called the shekel, after the shekel of the sanctuary. Denominated. And when we were to pay our head tax, it was paid one half shekel after the shekel of the sanctuary. And when you redeemed back a child, it was 5 shekels. And it was 5 shekels of silver. Now, of course, God didn't know what he was talking about. He was like Gary North. He had his head in the wrong end. And so, fortunately, we've got Alan Greenspan, the Federal Reserve, and George Bush and the federal government to correct God's mistakes. Now, thank God for George Bush and Alan Greenspan, huh? Well, back about 1980, when I woke up to this gold and silver story in the Bible, I said, you know, I think I'm going to practice gold and silver. I think I'll get off of paper and go on to hard money. And I've prospered ever since. I've just been happy as a clam at high tide. I'm not complaining. I get laughed at a lot because I'm always working against the trend. When the price of silver is going down, I'm buying. When the price of silver is going up, I sell. Well, that's what you're supposed to do, isn't it? Aren't you supposed to sell at the top and buy at the bottom? Unfortunately, you don't know where the tops or bottoms are, but we always know where the trend is. So if fools rush in where angels fare to tread, well, here then rusheth the fool. But before I lay the history out before you, let's look at something else that you'll need to understand before the historical argument makes sense. It's called regression to the mean. Regression to the mean. Now, one of the bywords of investing is everything returns to its 200-day moving average. So when you think about it, it becomes pretty obvious because of what an average is. Mathematically, the average is the sum of all of the readings divided by the number of readings. It's not the reading right in the middle. It's not that reading that you take in the middle of all of the readings or the halfway point. That's called the median. The median, not the average. Now, the average is going to lie further or nearer from the middle according to how many readings above or below that median we take, how far above or below that median they lie. Now, the fact is that markets do very often trade back to their averages to bewilder the unlearned. Analysts call this a regression to the mean. It's a return to the average. Return to the average. The longer you watch, the more likely the market is to return to the mean. The farther that any market trades away from its mean, and the longer it stays there, the more likely it is to trade back to the mean. So if you'll bear that in mind, what has been the gold-silver ratio's mean average over the last couple of 100 years? Here are the numbers using the yearly averages. From 1792 to 2003, the mean average is 31-to-1. 1900 to 2003, it's 46, nearly 47. 1941 to 2003 is 48, and 1980 to 2003 is 63. All right. So it's 31, 46, 48, and 63, so we've made 4 readings from 1792. To 2003. However, markets don't just return quietly to their mean average. Rather, they swing like a pendulum, sometimes violently and often far past the mean, so far past the average, whatever the price should be. You saw that in 1980. if you took the price of gold and you divided that by 16, that would have told you what the price of gold and silver should have been. It didn't. Silver went way past where it should have been and went up to $50. When that thing hit $50, we all knew, you know, every trader, every investor knew, that this thing is going to swing violently back. And it did. It went from 50 to 15, not overnight, but in a month. I mean, the when the bubble broke at $54, it just went right straight down to $15. Well, when I got down to 15, I said, okay, that's it. There's the bottom. Well, little did I know that it was going to go lower. But you see, I had paper dollars back in the 1980s and 90s. What was I going to do? Hang on to those paper dollars and then buy the silver at four? Well, if I had known that silver was going to go to four, yeah, I would have done that. But I never knew, and neither do you. But it doesn't make any difference, because what we're going to do is we're going to average all of my silver purchases from $15 down to $4, and we'll come up with a mean average. And right now, the price of silver is above my mean average. All right, so I had to get rid of my paper dollars, which were depreciating. Remember, I lost 50% of my purchasing power between 1980 and 2000. Holding paper, I lost 50% of my purchasing power. In other words, I had to have made 5% net per year. Well, I'm not going to get out of bed for 5%. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to work and invest with my gold and silver in the same way that other people work and invest with their stocks and bonds. And while other people are dealing in value, I deal in substance, real weights and measures. So while other people are trading $100 and turning it into $200, I'm trading 100 ounces into 200 ounces. And that's what this manual is all about. It's the only how-to manual that I've ever seen or heard of. I guess anybody could have written it, but who would have thought of it? First of all, there isn't anybody out there that wants to buy it. And that's because people that are into metals are into either gold or silver. They're not into both, buy metals. The only people that would do that would be somebody that was following the Mosaic Law. Think about that. Now, let's go back here to our averages. Markets don't just return quietly to their mean average. They swing like a pendulum, and sometimes violently and often way past their mean. Thus, even though the mean from 1900 to 2003 is 46.83, the gold-silver ratio three times in the 20th century returned not only to that mean average, but shot way past it, all the way to 16 to 1. It did it in 1919, 1967, and 1980. Now, don't you think that's a bit odd? I mean, that every single time that it overshot, separated by 50 years or 13 years, it went back to 16 to 1 and it stopped there every single time. How do you explain that? Is it ancestral memory? Is it coincidence? Is it evolutionary? I don't know. I only observe that it has happened repeatedly, and therefore I think it's going to happen again. Now, one thing is for sure, it's no myth, but it's now an observed fact. Now, if I can't explain that with a theory that makes it a mystery, not a myth. Now, I can't explain why women love men, but, you know, that's the way of it. They do. Now, let's take a look at statistical probability. Another way to consider regression to the mean is statistically. A mathematician named, see if I can pronounce this, T-C-H-E-B-Y-C-H-E-F-F. So I got Takhbichev, I guess that is. Is it Takhbichev? Discovered that when a set of readings is normally distributed, graphed by a bell-shaped curve, 68.3% of all of the readings would fall within one standard deviation of the mean, plus or minus. A standard deviation measures the variability of the data. 95.45% of the data will fall within two standard deviations of the mean, plus or minus, and 99.73% of all data falls within three standard deviations, plus or minus. All right, let me explain that in a little simpler term. Let's suppose we're playing on a crap table. And we bet a dollar on 12. Now, the mathematical chances of two sixes coming up to make 12 is 1 in 36 throws of the dice. So once every 36 throws of the dice, a 12 is going to come up, on average. But you can throw the dice 72 times, and you won't get a 12. But what that's telling you is, in the next 36 times, the chances of a 12 coming up are much greater. In fact, it's 90-some percent greater. The longer that you stay away from the average, then the greater the probability that the statistical event is going to occur. Now, that's what that's telling you. But let's forget about the swing past the mean. What if silver returns to the mean alone and went no further? From 70 to 1, a return to the 20-year mean would cause silver to outperform gold by 9%. A return to the 50-year mean, silver would outperform gold by 31%. A return to the 100-year mean, silver outpaces gold by 33%. Revisit the 200-year mean average and silver rises 2.2 times as fast as gold, so it outperforms it by 120%. In every case, a return to the mean alone, without swinging past the mean, would cause silver to outperform gold. Now, so far, in the last 200 years, when the swing occurs, it never swings back to the average. It goes way beyond the average. Well beyond the mean. Now, the correct price is 17.5 to 1. Now, in monetary circles, we use the number 16 to 1. So when you hear me use the word 16 to 1, it's actually 1.5 off of the real mean. But, you know, 16 is the number that everybody wants to use. So I just use it for convenience sake. All right, now can it happen again? Well, can it happen ever again? Or has the relationship between silver and gold changed somehow? It happened in 1907 and 1998. When Warren Buffett began buying silver in the summer of 1997, the ratio of silver to gold stood at 75 to 1. All right, now that ratio, let me explain it to you again, or let me mention it to you. In 1997, the price of silver was 75 ounces of silver equaled 1 ounce of gold. That's called the silver-gold ratio. Okay, now watch this. Warren Buffett continued to buy through the summer and into the fall, and the ratio continued to erode, but not very fast. The July high was 75 to 1, August 74 to 1, September 69 to 1, October 67 to 1, November 64 to 1, December 55 to 1. The low never dropped below 56 until December of 97 when it hit 46 to 1. Now, when news leaked out in January that Buffett was buying silver, silver surged to $7.80 in London. At the peak of that surge, early in February, the ratio briefly dropped below 40 to 1. Now, that event illustrates two things about silver. Silver is very volatile, and that's because it's a small market, much smaller than the gold market. And once silver is launched, it moves very far, very fast. Now, during the last episode of Silver Strength, 5 years ago, silver once again regressed to the 100-year mean and beyond. Now, I reckon regression to the mean isn't so worthless after all. Of course, that does not guarantee that silver will ever repeat that move again, but it does argue toward that conclusion. I mean, you could sit here and throw dice, and the number 12 may never come up again. I mean, the chances of a 12 coming up are 36 to 1. But we know from observation and statistics that when you start throwing the dice, for instance, if I'm on a crap table and I notice that the number 12 hasn't come up for three cycles, that is 36, 36, and 36. That's 36 times 3 is 108 times. That means that in the next 36 throws of the dice, 12 is more likely to come up than it was in the first three, but there's no guarantee that it's going to come up in the next 36 throws of the dice. But by the time you add 36 to 108, you're up to 144. That's four cycles. Then add 36. That takes you up to 180. That's five cycles. And then six cycles and seven cycles. What do you think the chances are that you could throw the dice 500 times and a 12 would not come up? Well, what do you think the chances of silver not hitting 16 to 1 again are going to be? I mean, that's what you're betting against. Doesn't happen often. And in fact, it doesn't never have to happen again, because we don't wait until silver hits 16 to 1 to take our profits. You take your profits. And keep in mind that transportation and physical possession are costs of doing business. Now, most people, they want to buy options, futures, and stocks because the costs are so much cheaper. Well, okay, but the risks are much greater. And remember that I'm the kind of guy that I'm not a gambler. I'm not here to risk what I've already earned. See, what the labor that I expended back in 1980, 85, 90, 95, and 2000 is labor that I expended. It's gone forever. And I converted that into gold and silver. I don't want that to be taken away. So, then I can't afford to gamble. I'm not here to gamble. I'm just here to invest. Now, in value, it doesn't make any difference to me whether the silver is 15 to 1, or excuse me, $15 for an ounce of silver, or $4. Because when I had the $15 back in 1980, I converted those paper dollars, which were losing value every day, into hard metal. And I did the same thing in 1990, but I didn't have to spend $15, only had to spend 10. And then about 1995, only had to spend 4. Well, okay. So in 1995, I was getting 2.5 times as much silver for my labor as I was in 1990. And in 1990, I was getting a third more silver than I was in 1980. So, can you see, I've always been converting my labor into the hard metal. So I've always had my labor in my hand. I can hold it in my fist. Now I've got a rule that I follow in business, and that is, a fool gives his money to somebody else to lose. A wise man invests his own money in himself. So I don't give my money to somebody on the stock market to invest and lose. After all, he's got nothing to lose. If he makes money, good for him. If he loses money, he doesn't care. He's losing yours. Always remember that. When you've got your money in your grubby little fist, when you invest it and you lose it, you're losing your own productivity. I think you'll be a lot more happy investing in yourself. Now, going back to the moving averages, another technical tool used to forecast markets is called the moving average. Unlike a simple average, the moving average measures a specific period back from the present. For instance, a 50-day moving average averages the prices of the past 50 days. A 10-day moving average averages the last 10 days. Tomorrow, we will recalculate the moving average, throwing out the oldest reading and adding to the latest. All right, so you do the same thing on a crap table. And when you watch the moving average, that is, the throwing of the dice, for 36 throws of the dice, 12 doesn't come up. All right, so this goes on three times. Well, now, when you see three cycles, 108 throws of the dice, and no 12, Now you start betting every throw of the dice, you put a dollar on 12, 36 times, from 108 to 144. And what'll happen is that the 12 will come up. And on average, it'll come up two or three times. Because over the long haul, by the time you throw the dice 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, a million times, the average is going to be 36 to 1. So when you're watching these market averages and you see these moving averages, that's what they're doing. They're simply taking the moving average. And the stock market in reality is a crap table. It's a crap table that people bet on. That's what they're dealing in. Commodities and futures and stocks, they're all gambling. They're gambling on values in paper money, which is prohibited in the scripture. I just thought I'd throw that in. Interest and usury is prohibited. So is the gambling prohibited. Now, people like interest and usury. They like gambling. They love paper because it gives us some excitement and some thrills in life. That's fine. If that's what you want to do, get after it. But when you get to be old like me, you know, then we've got less days left to us. I don't have enough days to go out and redo what I've done over the last 25 years, so I can't afford to lose what I've got. But looking at these moving averages, they hint to us about direction. So when the averages lie one above each other in numerical order, and if turned down, we can be fairly sure that the market is headed down, and vice versa. So as the price actually crosses those moving averages, we get additional confirmation. The market adage holds that sooner or later everything returns to its 200-day moving average. The 200-year moving average for the gold-silver ratio stands right now at 32.63 to 1. If silver only returned to that ratio from its present 70 to 1, it would outperform gold 2.2 times. And right now, the ratio's 10-year moving average stands at 65.52, and the 20-year moving average at 68.88, below the current ratio of 70. The 10-year average, however, has crossed the 20-year heading down. That's our first hint that the ratio is turning down. Next, it must fall below the 10-year moving average, and then below the 10 and 20-year moving averages, and then the 50-year lurks at 46.52, and 200-year at 32.54. So as the ratio passes each of these levels, it will confirm again and add to our confidence that silver is indeed regressing to the mean. And you know, every time that the move moves by 20, that is, if it's at 80 to 1, and it moves to 60, that's a 25% profit. Take your profit at 60, and then reinvest at 60. And then when it moves to 40, well, then you take your profit again. When it moves from 40 to 20, then you take your profit again. See, each time that you have a move in the market, now you can invest it the other way. You see, once you've made your move from 80 to 60, you take your gold and you buy back in gold and watch it move from 60 to 80. Every time it moves, it doesn't make any difference whether it's moving up or moving down. And this is what we call selling short or selling long. They do it in the stock market. If the price of stocks moves down, you make a profit. If the price of stocks moves up, you make a profit, depending on which side you're on. Same thing is true with the averages when you're betting on a crap table. If you got six passes in a row, well, then the odds are you're going to have six don't passes, not necessarily in a row, but they're going to average out. So that's the time to make your bet on the don't pass side of the line. That's just the way the stock market works and the metals markets work. And that's what we're doing here. Follow the market because the trend is your friend. Well, we're about out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. Good night, friends.